I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Bernie Sanders may be a national figure, but the votes that matter in a few weeks belong solely to Vermonters. Sanders is hoping for a third term as one of Vermont's two U.S. senators. After winning both the Democratic and Progressive nominations in Vermont's August primary, he declined the party's nominations and is running again as an independent. Sanders has been in Congress since 1990, serving 16 years in the House of Representatives before moving over to the Senate. This year, he faces seven independent challengers and one Republican, businessman Lawrence Zupan, who had this to say about his opponent in a Vermont Edition interview 2 weeks ago.
I'm a Republican who loves the United States of America, who always has loved the United States of America, and always will love the United States of America. A sentence, by the way, which I invite Senator Sanders to repeat anytime he feels so inclined.
Are you suggesting that you don't think Senator Sanders loves the United States of America?
I am suggesting that he loves a system that's anathema and foreign to our system more, as defined by his love and his promulgation of socialism at every single drop of the hat wherever he goes.
Bernie Sanders joins us by phone from his Senate office in Washington to explain his position, his philosophy, and why he thinks he deserves your vote in 26 days. Bernie Sanders, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, you want care to respond to Lawrence Zupan?
No. I mean, it's just an absurd remark to suggest that I don't love the United States of America, you know. My father came to this country at the age of 17 without a nickel in his pocket, was able to raise two kids, and had the security and the freedom that the United States gave him. And I've done everything in my power as a representative of the people of Vermont in Washington to protect the interests of the people of the United States, to improve life in the United States. And it's absurd. Silly things that this Republican is saying.
Well, let's talk about life in the United States and elsewhere. A new report from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just came out, and it paints a very stark picture.
It sure does, Jane.
So for people who are not aware of it or haven't been paying attention to the news coming out of this, by 2040, it suggests that we could see a 2.7-degree increase in global temperature, and that would be catastrophic. And in order to avoid some of the most dire implications and outcomes, we would need to move very quickly, and we would basically need to overhaul how we do our lives. So you and I have talked about climate change. I know you agree with that panel's report. Yeah. What do you think we can actually
do? Well, first of all, what we have to do is get rid of this president who not only does not acknowledge the reality of climate change, but every single day he is pushing policies to put more carbon into the air. We have an EPA which does not protect the environment but is anti-environment. It is working hand in glove with the coal industry, with the oil companies, with the gas companies. Now, what this IPCC report suggests, as you just mentioned, is we are in dire circumstances, and people have laughed at me and attacked me when they say, Bernie, what do you think the major foreign policy crisis we face? And I said, it's climate change. And we have got to, right now, do everything we can to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energies like wind, solar, geothermal, and other technologies. Several years ago, I introduced the most sweeping climate change legislation ever introduced in the Senate. And my view is right now, we have got to take on the fossil fuel industry, take on the Koch brothers, take on Trump, whose support for short-term profits of the fossil fuel industry could literally leave this planet uninhabitable for our kids and future generations. So what do we have to do? We have to invest very significantly in sustainable energy. The good news is that the cost of solar has plummeted, wind is plummeting. We have got to invest in energy efficiency to make our homes more efficient and save fuel. We've got to electrify our transportation system. And we've got to do it, as this report suggests, immediately and in a very bold way.
Yeah, and what would that bold way be? A carbon tax? Would there be some incentive where the price of the carbon tax goes back onto renewable energy sources?
A carbon tax is something, I think I was the first member of the Senate to have introduced a carbon tax, yes. But the other thing that we have got to do is to understand that the cheapest form of new electricity in America today is not coal, it's not gas, it is solar. And that means that we have to invest heavily to make it easier for people to be able to put solar up on their rooftops, to build community solar, to build large-scale utility solar. At the end of the day, these investments will cut, not only help us combat climate change, which is the most important thing, it will cut fuel bills for the American people and create millions of jobs. The main point here, in my view, is we have got to look at climate change as we would be looking at something like a war. You know, if we were attacked by a foreign enemy, we would respond. Climate change is that type of enemy, and it also requires us to be working with other countries around the world, not withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, not going to all kinds of fights with our allies, bringing the world together, because we can't do it alone, to transform the global energy system.
You know, normally you and I would have more time. It sounds like you have to actually leave early today to go for a vote.
We will see. The vote was scheduled at 12:10, and I have some time, but you never know around here. The vote may not take place till a little bit later.
Well, good. I'm going to leave you to tell me when you have to leave. But yeah, in the meantime, thinking that you might need to leave early, let's run through several different issues, because I want voters and listeners to be able to understand your position on issues as they look ahead to these elections. Senator Sanders, you recently introduced legislation that would levy a tax on big companies whose workers rely heavily on federal assistance programs to bridge the gap between what they earn and what they need to live. It was not very subtly named. It's the Stop Bezos Act. Jeff Bezos, of course, the head of Amazon. And Amazon just announced it is upping the minimum wage for all employees, yeah, including seasonal and part-time workers, to $15 an hour. Does that strengthen your resolve for a federal change, or do you see market forces and low unemployment pushing employers in that direction anyway?
No, we have got to pass a national minimum wage of $15 an hour. Let me tell you why. Right now, unemployment is relatively low in Vermont and throughout the country, at least most parts of the country. But the reality is that we have tens of millions of workers today working for wages that are basically unlivable, making $10, $12 an hour, even less. And in my view, if you work 40 hours a week, you should not be living in poverty. In terms of Bezos and Amazon, what we said, using them as an example, is that how absurd is it that the wealthiest guy in the world, worth about $155 billion, was paying many of his workers, the people who worked in their warehouses, wages that were so low, 10, 11, 12 bucks an hour, that they had to go on food stamps, Medicaid, and subsidized housing paid for by the taxpayers of this country. Taxpayers, middle-class people, should not have to subsidize the wealthiest guy in the world. Well, we put a lot of pressure on Amazon, and as you mentioned, just a week or two ago, they announced that the minimum wage that they're going to pay all of their workers, that means permanent, part-time, and temporary, 350,000 workers going up to 15 bucks an hour. We also had success working with the Disney Corporation, who are paying their workers in Anaheim, California, and Orlando, Florida, very low wages. They're going up to 15 bucks an hour. All of that is a good sign. But at the end of the day, we need federal legislation, 15 bucks an hour, and the right of workers to have a union to represent them.
Let's talk guns. When we spoke with you in August ahead of the primary, you told VPR that you want to, quote, improve and expand the ability of officials in terms of knowing who has guns, end quote. Does that mean a federal registry? Are you advocating for a gun registry?
What I am advocating for is what the overwhelming majority of the American people want, and that is common sense gun safety legislation. And that means that we have got to make it harder for people who should not be having guns to have guns, that we have to do with the gun show, good away with the gun show loophole, that we have to do with the so-called, do away with the so-called straw man provision. And bottom line, to enforce regulations that tell us who should not have and own a gun.
Yes, but you didn't answer my question about the registry, because what you said in terms of knowing who has guns, that's not something that we have in this country right now. And if you want to know who has a gun, whether they should or not, then you kind of have to have a registry so you can trace
the history
of that gun.
Yeah, well, we do. I mean, if you go in, Jane, if you go into a gun shop right now and you buy a gun, you have to. They will check out whether or not what your background is, and that's the appropriate thing to do. And we have to expand that and make it more efficient.
That's a background check. That's different. They know that I purchased the gun, and if you go to that gun shop, you will find that purchase, you know, that I've made it. If I give my gun to my husband and he gives his gun to his brother, nobody knows who has that gun.
Well, that's a good point, and I think right now the legislation excludes transfer of guns within the family. Is that your point?
Well, my point is that a gun registry is sort of separate from background checks. Everybody has to have a background check.
Right, you know, I do believe that we should significantly improve and expand background checks. I just can't give you an answer to your question.
Is that because you haven't thought about it, or because it's too politically dicey?
No, it's not too politically dicey. I haven't looked at the implications of it.
So let's talk about health care. This is a big issue for you. Last year, you introduced a Medicare for All federal health plan. This week, the president ran an op-ed in USA Today saying the Medicare for All plan is really Medicare for none. And he wrote, by eliminating Medicare as a program for seniors and outlawing the ability of Americans to enroll in private and employer-based plans, the Democratic plan would inevitably lead to the massive rationing of health care. The president went on to say doctors and hospitals would be put out of business, seniors would lose access to their favorite doctors. There would be long wait lines for appointments and procedures. Previously covered care would effectively be denied. Obviously, you disagree. How do you convince the American public that your plan
will do that? Well, for a start, it's not that I disagree. The president, unfortunately, is a pathological liar, and he was roundly condemned yesterday for that op-ed. I think the Washington Post did a fact check, which pointed out that he lied and lied and lied. In fact, we just finished an op-ed this morning, which I think will go into USA Today, also dealing with his lies. Here is, you know, of the many lies that he said. Number one, his main argument, which they have been making for a while, is that by expanding Medicare for All, we will be lowering the quality of care that seniors now get on Medicare. That's a lie. What our bill does is expand coverage for seniors. Right now, the Medicare program is a very strong and good program, but it doesn't cover dental care, which is a real need in Vermont, dentures. It doesn't cover eyeglasses and optical care. It doesn't cover hearing aids and audiology. We expand coverage for seniors, not to mention doing away with deductibles and copayment and lowering the cost of prescription drugs. The president says that Medicare for All would be more expensive. No, it would be less expensive. Right now, we're spending twice as much per capita as virtually any other country on earth. And study after study shows that a Medicare for All program would lower the cost for health care for the middle class and working families, while ending the absurdity of us having 30 million people with no health insurance and even more who are underinsured. So, you know, we're dealing with a president who lies all of the time. The good news is the Medicare for All program that I introduced is extremely popular in Vermont and around the country. The last poll that I saw now has about 70% of American people supporting it.
We got a question for you from Kat on this. She says, I love your idea of a Medicare for All single-payer health insurance, but I have to ask if you're intending your expansion of Medicare to be an expansion of the existing cost-sharing structure where the insurance pays about 80% and leaves the patient responsible for the remaining 20%. I'd be very interested to hear at least a little about how you envision envision the plan's actual plan design. Deductibles before the coverage kicks in? Will there be a flat fee copay or a coinsurance? Details would be nice, even if it's a work in progress. I'd feel more comfortable getting behind the idea if I knew more about what the plan might be. There you go.
It's not a work in progress. The plan is available on our website. It's more than a few pages. But basically, it eliminates all deductibles and all copayments. That's what it does.
And this remind us of how this would be paid for. You'd have an income-based tax paid by employers.
That's something that the Congress is going to have to deal with. It will be paid for, though, in a progressive way. And at the end of the day, if I have anything to say about it, it will mean substantial reductions in health care costs to middle class and working families. Right now, as you may know, the average family of four in this country spends $28,000 a year on health care. Many employers are paying far more than they can afford to pay to provide health insurance for their workers. And as I mentioned before, we spend about twice as much per capita on health care as do the people of any other country who often get better health care outcomes than we do. So how you pay for it is not going to be easy, and that's going to have to be debated. But at a time when we have massive levels of income and wealth inequality, when Trump has given $1 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%, we will pay for it in a fair and progressive way.
Brian is calling in from Burlington. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. So I am a recent transplant to Vermont, and part of why I came here was because of Bernie Sanders' political ideology and his the popularization of I got to know more about social democracy and what that meant. And in that vein, I'm curious who Senator Sanders has his eye on as far as who shares his political ideology, and who should we be looking for? Who should we be looking out for?
Let's put that to the senator. So what about that? You're going on a 9-state tour. You are supporting other candidates around the country.
Right. But right now, my immediate goal is to end the disastrous and dangerous one-party rule that now exists here in Washington. We have a right-wing, dangerous president. We have an extreme right-wing House and an extreme right-wing Senate. And I'm going to do everything that I can by supporting progressive candidates for the Senate, for the House, and in fact for governor's offices to be, to end this one-party rule. And that's why, that's what I will be doing. But I think what we can say, and this is an important point, is that all over this country, to answer the caller, we're seeing more and more people understand what a progressive ideology is and support that ideology. Support for the raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, overwhelming Medicare for all, as I mentioned before, now supported by 70% of the American people, making public colleges and universities tuition free, very, very strong support, demanding that the wealthy start paying their fair share of taxes, very strong support, moving forward with climate change, growing support. So the good news from my perspective is that ideas that some of us have been talking about for years are now being supported by a significant majority of the American people. And obviously, when that happens, you have more and more candidates coming forward supporting Medicare for all, supporting raising the minimum wage to a living wage, dealing with climate change, gun safety legislation, et cetera.
And we don't have a ton of time, but can Brian find the actual names of the candidates you're supporting on your website?
I suspect that that's up on my campaign, not my Senate, but my campaign website.
What is the right balance for a senator to think and work on issues that are specifically important or germane to the constituents of your state versus working and thinking on a national scale? You seem to be trying to thread that needle.
That's a very fair question, and the answer is obviously you got to do both. My job is to represent Vermont, and I work very hard on issues of Vermont. Just before I got on the air, I was listening to the news, and people were talking about the crisis in affordable housing. Well, some of the money that's coming into Vermont right now is a direct result of the National Affordable Housing Trust Fund legislation that I wrote some years ago. The fact that we have about a quarter of the people in the state of Vermont now getting their primary health care through community health centers has a lot to do with the fact that I helped double funding for community health centers, about $12 billion, which has impacted Vermont very greatly. The fact that we have now 5 community-based outreach clinics for our veterans has to do with something of the work that I did. But to answer your question, obviously, there's got to be a balance. But right now, when we have a very dangerous president in the White House, a guy who wanted to throw 32 million people off the health insurance that they have, somebody who is successful giving $1 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%, who doesn't believe in climate change, who is vehemently anti-immigrant, who is a racist and a homophobe and a religious bigot. In the midst of all of that, it becomes very, very imperative that we do everything that we can, that we have a Senate and a House that can effectively stand up to him.
Is that only through legislative means, or have you changed your position on impeachment?
Have I changed my views on impeachment? Well, there is no... No, I haven't changed my views on impeachment. What I've said is all along that obviously there is an investigation going on by Mr. Mueller right now. You don't talk about impeachment, in my view, unless you have the facts clearly laid out. And those that report has not yet been published.
One more question from a listener. Shauna in Guildhall says, Bernie has neither confirmed nor denied another run for the presidency in 2020. Without a denial, one can only assume that it is a possibility. Bernie has often said we need new blood in the political process. So why are you seeking another term as senator when your focus may be elsewhere?
Well, I'm seeking another term for Senate because I very much want to represent Vermont in the United States Senate. In terms of a run for president, what I have said repeatedly is that no decision has been made, and that's simply true. Right now, my focus is on this 2018 midterm elections. I'm running hard. We've had, my recollection is correct, I think about 13 rallies in the state of Vermont since in this campaign so far. We just had four over the last week, and unfortunately, I had to call in to those rallies because I was stuck here in Washington with the Kavanaugh nomination. But we're going to work hard to get reelected in Vermont, and I'm going to do my best to see that we end one-party rule in the House and the Senate. But I have not yet made a decision regarding whether or not I'll run again for president.
Julie in Burlington says Vermont's congressional delegation supports the F-35 fighter jet, but the Trump administration has changed geopolitics, and now a commercial airport is going to house aircraft compatible with nuclear weapons. Do you still support the program?
It's not a question of supporting the program. The F-35 is the plane of record for NATO, for the United States Air Force. It's not a question of supporting it. The question is where it goes. If it doesn't go into Vermont, and I do support it going into Vermont, it will go to Florida or South Carolina or some other state. So
this question of nuclear weapons, you know, is one that has been brought up, but not been a huge part of the conversation previously. Is that something that worries you or that you're thinking about?
About nuclear weapons? Of course I'm concerned about nuclear weapons, so we have to move aggressively to a non-nuclear treaty. One of the reasons I voted against the recent defense bill, and that was not only because there was a huge increase in defense spending, but because it contained a provision in there that would accelerate the possibility of a nuclear war. So of course, it is an issue of huge concern.
Well, Bernie, I think you have to go vote now, so we'll let you go. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
That's Bernie Sanders running for a third term in the U.S. Senate. He has a vote in the Senate today, so our time was a little bit curtailed. But you can also listen back to our interview with his Republican challenger, Lawrence Zupan, at vpr.net.